You're listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. Thanks to everyone who tunes in on a weekly basis. If you're enjoying the show, I'd love it if you take a moment to share it with a friend. This week, we're talking about solo female travel and how to stay safe on the road. We've got Tess from the Delicate Revolt blog here to share some of her strategies to protect yourself in the air, in a taxi or Uber, and hanging out at a bar on your own. We've also got a listener question about the Barclays Advantage Aviator credit card, which we'll cover in the final two pennies. But first up, it's Tess and I talking about staying safe on the road.
Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and we're joined by Tess from the blog Delicate Revolt today. And we're talking about a subject that is important for probably at least half of the audience based on the demographics, and that's traveling as a solo female traveler. Whether it's business travel or personal travel, the reality is that there are still places that are less safe to travel if you're a woman traveling on your own, and you might not think of some of those places off the bat. Certainly there are the places where there are war zones and stuff like that, but a lot of the places that you might otherwise consider safe might not be as safe as you think, and there are some good tips that you can use to help keep yourself safer. These are all easy to do things. And so we've got Tess on today from Delicate Revolt. This is her first time on the Miles to Go podcast with us. Tess, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Pizza. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and you've got a wealth of travel under your belt. I know I see you guys crisscrossing the world. Where is the most recent place you have been hanging out?
Just came back from 3 weeks in Shanghai.
Yeah. I still haven't been.
I go there on average once a year. Yeah. But it's exciting. Oh, nice. Check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's on my list. It's on that list of places that I know I need to get to, but I just haven't made it to yet.
Yeah, it's closer than you thought.
Well, with so many nonstop flights with the 787s and A350s, everything is so much closer than when I first started traveling, which is great. It really opens up the map for places to go on so many different nonstop options that never used to exist.
Yeah, that's why I want to take advantage of the nonstop flights in the West Coast, because that makes it extra, like, save a few more hours compared to when I was in East Coast.
Right, yeah, because you're based in Seattle, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you get a bunch of nice nonstop Asia options there.
Right.
A little harder to get to Europe than it is for me on the East Coast.
Yeah, exactly. So when I was on the East Coast, I really enjoy overnight flights to Europe. And Asia is a bit far away. So when I'm now in West Coast, you know, like I want to go into Europe, it's much longer. So Asia seems closer. So my focus of my route started to shift the region to Asia.
Yeah. So let's walk through some of the key points of a typical trip, and let's start with your flights, and let's go over a couple of things that somebody can do if they're traveling on their own and they want to make sure that they're protecting themselves up in the air.
Okay, sure. So when you are in flight, one thing, the rule for myself is if you will be after landing, if you will be going to hotel by yourself or will be driving, avoid taking sleeping pills or melatonin, anything that will make you sleepy, a kind of slow reaction mode. That's one thing. And the other is if your neighbor is making you uncomfortable, and I think any of the ladies, you know it, what I mean, you can actually ask the crew to help you and they'll be happy to put you in a different seat. I actually learned it from my own experience. I was on a flight and the passenger next to me was making me uncomfortable, and then he went to the bathroom. So actually, at that time, the crew came to me. So she asked me, she said, "Is he making you uncomfortable?" Then I said, "Yes." And then she said, "Do you want me to find a different seat for you?" So I said, "Yeah, if you can." So she really jumped into action really quick. I don't know how she did it. She found the biggest biggest, tallest guy on the plane who is willing to swap seat with me. So I immediately, you know, go to the new seat, and I kind of like, I'll like peek behind my new seat. I just, because I don't want the old neighbor to see where I am. So I saw him, came out of the bathroom, went to his seat, and all of a sudden, you know, like saw the new guy next to him, like, what, where does this come from? And then he started to look around to find where I am. Then I immediately buried my head down my new seat, you know, like the worst spy ever. So ever since that incident, I know if this happens again, I can ask the crew to help, and they're able and willing to help me out in that situation.
Yeah, I think you'll find most airline crews are willing to help in situations like that. They want to stop the problem before the problem happens. It, you know, I think it's important, given how charged up some people can be in the air nowadays, to try to do it in a discreet way. As you said, you waited for them to go to the bathroom. In this case, the crew came to you. But I mean, certainly if you need to reseat yourself, better to go find the flight crew than to bring them over to you and make an incident out of it. Again, the end goal here is to get through the flight without having a problem. So the crew there to help you. They've certainly seen situations like this before, so don't hesitate to rely on them.
Yeah, that's definitely what I learned. Yeah.
So once we're on the ground, let's talk about different ways to protect yourself when you're trying to get from the airport to your hotel. So whether it's taxi or Uber, it's, you know, it's late at night. What can you do to protect yourself?
Yeah. So the first of all is try to avoid landing really at night, where you would be forced to take an Uber or taxi at late night, to avoid it at all costs. But there are situations where you just have to do it. So I would say, especially with Uber, because there are times, say, the number one rule is never wait for the Uber in a dark place, and just with your head down, stare at the screen. So look around, pay attention to your surroundings. Number two is sometimes, say, if I do a shared ride, the app would ask me to go to a meeting spot. It's a good spot for the algorithm, but that sometimes could be a dark place where there is nobody around. So in those situations, I really feel like, oh, when would the car come? So what I learned that is try to just stay where you are. Get the Uber, say, at the hotel, near the hotel lobby, at the restaurant, at the bar. Or you can just ask, even when you do a shared ride, there's a button on the app you can push so the car will come to you. You only pay like $1 to $2 more, but it's worth it to pay a little extra for the safety. So the car will come directly where you are, where I will be waiting. You know, I will look for somewhere that's bright, where there's a lot of people around. And actually, I was doing some research, you know, actually I learned that in some countries, that in Paris and Dubai, they have women, female-only taxi service. And I think there's an app in New York too.
Yep.
For where you can just app. Yeah, I think that's a really niche, useful market. I think New York, probably there's still a lot of people around in New York, but in Seattle, I mean, definitely, if you want a cab or Uber after 9 o'clock, there's just pitch dark. I would really think that would be really useful, a useful app to have. And then when you are in the Uber, so sometimes I feel like it takes a little bit the actress in you. So sometimes I will pretend, say, I am talking to my colleague or my friend who is waiting for me at the destination or at the hotel. So the driver understand that the driver think that when I arrive, somebody is expecting me. If I never show up or somehow disappear, somebody is going to figure out immediately and then figure out what happened. Or sometimes if I really feel kind of unsafe, I will, or pretend I'm doing a FaceTime with somebody, and like the driver feel like, you know, and somehow, you know, I got his face in a camera. So again, he understand if I disappeared, somehow somebody, you know, has his picture or video of him on file. So it makes it, you know, more, they have more to consider. There is more likely, you know, before they, if they want to do anything. Or you can share the trip. If you are using one of those app, there's an option you can share the ride. You can share that with your family member so they can understand exactly where you are. They know the route. So using these technology to help people track you and let the driver know that you guys are being tracked.
Yep. And it's funny because when they first came out with the share your ride feature, I could never really figure out why it was so important for somebody to know when I was going to get there. And then I thought about the safety side of it. Now, that was years ago when Uber was first coming on the market. Nowadays, you'll also find that a good number of the different transportation apps, Uber and Lyft, have for lack of a better term, a panic button inside the app. So I think it's important as well, if you're going through the steps to keep yourself safe, you're limiting the chance that something could happen. Something still could happen. And so it's good to have the app handy on your phone as opposed to having to try to dial 911 and talk to an officer and report an issue. The Uber and the Lyft button, the panic buttons, what they're doing there is you're alerting someone that there's a problem. And then those folks, in theory, Uber and Lyft, should know exactly where you are because they've got tracking on the vehicle. So that should help you in the future, if you've got that problem, for somebody to find you quickly without having to worry about being able to dial 911, give someone a cross street and what color car you're in. You know, Uber and Lyft have all that information. So I'd add to Tess's tips that those panic buttons inside those apps, which I have not used myself, but have heard that are there, are also good tips for folks to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool.
So we've covered planes and we've covered transportation. What do you do when you're in your hotel room to keep yourself safe?
So I always lock the door. So I don't mean just the big one, the lock, but also I call it a physical lock, like the chain securing guard on the door. Yep. So these, I always make sure to lock them. Someone gave me that advice, which is super useful, so that you can make sure nobody can break into your room even if somehow they got a room key somewhere. So that would make sure it's really safe. And also I learned that in, like, for example, Japan, they actually have a women-only floor, because when I was on a business trip to Japan, our local office, they sent two junior girls. They're like my escort 24 hours a day. So we went everywhere, lunches, meeting. They picked me up to the office. And then one day we check into the hotel, and I was expecting, you know, one would stay in the room next, right on the right side of my room, the other would be on the left side. And then they suddenly said, Tess, have a good night. We are going to our floor. So I was like, what do you mean? You're not going to leave me alone? What do you mean by your floor? So they told me that they have booked a female-only floor for me so that I can have a good rest. So it's super sweet and considerate. But I was joking. They probably think, you know, the colleague from New York probably have quite a wild nightlife. So make sure I can focus on my meeting the next day, they put me on a female-only floor so I can have a good rest.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of that in certain cities where they have female-only floors. And I think it's important that when you get to your hotel room, the first thing you want to do is check your door locks. And if they don't work, that's the perfect opportunity to go back down to the front desk and make sure that they can reassign your room. Lastly, let's talk about social aspects. So if you're going to head out to a bar or a restaurant, share with our listeners a couple of tips on how to keep yourself safe when you're in a public setting like that.
Okay, so first, never leave your drink alone, because you never know if somebody is going to put anything in your drink when you went to bathroom or anything. And second, of course, try not to get drunk, because this is the same as sending a signal like, hey, you know, here's a target here, easy target here. And also, especially say if you're in a bar or any social occasion when you meet strangers. So in case, try to not disclose too much information that you're here alone. If people say, oh, are you here by yourself? So you can say, oh, I'm here with a friend, with a colleague. We're staying in the same hotel. So again, they know, you know, if you disappear or something happens, somebody is going to take some action to figure out what happened. It's not going to be, you know, without noticed. So these are the things that just to make sure what kind of information you share with people that you might think it's just casual information, but other people might take note of that. Yeah.
Yep, there are definitely plenty of folks that I know who have run into, whether it's tainted alcohol or people putting things into drinks. I think it's definitely something to be aware of if you're out and about. And this isn't just females; this is pretty much anyone. If you're going to get drunk in a bar with nobody there as your safety net, just know that you're taking on some extra risk.
Right.
Well, Tess, thanks a ton for walking through all this with our listeners. Thanks a bunch for being on the show. When you're not hanging out on long flights to Asia or hopping on the podcast with me, tell folks where they can track you down.
So I have a blog, Delegate Revolt. So they can come to DelegateRevolt.com. That is my blog. I also have a YouTube channel called Delegate Revolt TV. You can just type that name because I share business travel, the transition from a corporate job to entrepreneurship. So I will actually make a list of the key points I just mentioned today on my blog so that you can share with anyone who, or anyone in your family who, any female traveler who travels alone frequently, or someone is just about to take their first solo trip. So it will be on delegaterevolt.com/womentravelingalone.
And we will have links to all of that stuff in the show notes that you guys can check out there. Tess, thanks so much for being on. Safe travels.
Thank you.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back to wrap up this week's show with the final two pennies and a listener question. Rick writes in to ask us a question about his Barclays Advantage Aviator Red Card. This is a decent card to consider for your wallet, especially if you live in an American Airlines hub like Rick does. The card earns 2 miles per dollar on American Airlines purchases, and it also comes with a handful of other valuable benefits if you're flying on American Airlines. Rick asks about the Flight Sense program. It's a rounding up program that Barclays rolled out a year or two ago. Flight Sense essentially allows you to purchase Advantage miles for about a penny a mile in small quantities. While I haven't participated personally, that's not a bad price to buy Advantage miles at. I'd peg the value closer to a penny and a half each. However, I think there's a better answer to Rick's question, which is essentially, should he be participating in Flight Sense? Which isn't a bad idea if it's your everyday card. But adding a card here from something like the Chase Ultimate Rewards family makes a lot of sense to me. It gives him the flexibility to earn a flexible currency that transfers to popular travel brands such as Hyatt or Marriott, United Airlines, and it still allows him access to American Airlines through transfers to their partner, British Airways. A Citi double cash card isn't a horrible option either, given their new online transfer partners. If it's only Advantage miles that Rick is after, then looking at the bonus categories of some of the Marriott credit cards like the Bonvoy Brilliant Amex could also help him earning here. There he could earn 3 points per dollar on restaurants and 6 points per dollar at Marriott if those are categories he would normally spend in. 3 Marriott Bonvoy points transfers to 1 Advantage mile. However, you also get a 25% bonus when you transfer 60,000 points or more. In short, the Barclay Aviator Flight Sense program isn't a bad program to consider if you're putting everyday spend on that card. I'm just not sure that that's the right card for everyone's everyday spend. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. You can find links to everything we discussed today in the show notes. A big thanks to Tess for stopping by to talk about how to travel more safely. Thanks also to all of you for tuning into this week's show. If any of you have questions or suggestions for a future show, you can drop me an email at ed@pizzainmotion.com. And you can hit me up on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Pizza in Motion. And you can find me blogging daily at pizzainmotion.com. Until we upload again, we've got miles to go.